Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Clark Kellogg is, of course, Mr. College Basketball, the great analyst for CBS Sports. You can catch him throughout the 2018 NCAA tournament in the New York studio on CBS and TBS and TNT and even True TV. And we love talking to him. Clark, how are you?
I'm terrific, gentlemen. Great to be with you this morning. And, you get us across all of the Turner and CBS stations. So looking forward to the madness. Actually, it's already started, and then it'll really turn up here in the next few days.
Any chance you play a little one-on-one with President Trump? That was a bad,
no.
That's a bad joke. Yeah,
That's a short answer.
you don't want to get in a Twitter war. Yeah.
There are multiple ways to go on that, but we'll know.
Okay, so I went to Loyola, and the Ramblers have made the tournament for the first time in 33 years. And I got to tell you, I couldn't be more delighted for them. They're a great mid-major school. They can shoot the ball. They have a guy underneath that is a load and can rebound the ball and can score. He's got some nifty moves. What is a team like that? When you see a team, I think they're 28-5 now. They hit that threshold of mid-major with maybe a little upset potential.
Without question. I mean, very balanced, highly efficient at the offensive end. I watched the game when they beat Florida down in Gainesville, and then I've watched a couple of other games. Really enjoy watching this team play, and I love Crutwig. I mean, he's a low to the ground, savvy, skilled, throwback big guy. He makes shots when he takes them. He finds people, solid. I mean, he does everything well except high fly. And it just shows you there are a lot of ways to be a really good basketball player, even in this day and age of the three-point shot, spacing the floor, high-flying, dynamic athleticism. There are a lot of ways to be a good basketball player, and he is that, and only a freshman. So, that team is balanced, multiple double-digit scores, play hard, play together, share the ball, don't turn it over much. I mean, they've got a lot of ingredients that you like.
And, Clark, when you look at what the selection committee is going to look at for the teams that aren't automatic qualifiers, having won their conference tournament, and you know now you have the first four out, the next four out, the first four in on the bubble, all the different classifications from the bracketologists, when you look at quadrant one wins and quadrant two wins, is that just good that they have more tools with which to kind of discern who should be in and who should be out, or is it getting too complicated?
Having additional information and more resources in your toolbox and most anything is good. It becomes a matter now of filtering through and determining what of that information is most relevant. And as you're comparing teams that are fighting their way into the tournament, maybe that last 8-9 teams looking for 5 or 6 spots, where you differentiate. And I love the fact that it's a committee. I mean, it's not any one or two people. It's a majority vote based on 10 committee members. Most of the time, somebody may have to sit out because of a conflict of interest, whether it's an athletic director or commissioner in discussing a certain team. But by and large, you're going to have, 8 to 10 people voting on these teams and looking at that information objectively but subjectively. And I think, again, it's not a perfect system, but it's as close as we're going to get, and I know the effort the committee members put into it is second to none. They're really serious about trying to get it right, selecting those 36 at-large teams. And again, most of the time, 30 of those teams are fairly cut and dry. You get down to those last 5-6 teams is typically where you end up with some challenges.
We're in Chicago, so technically we're in the Midwest, but we're from Chicago, so it's a little different. But Notre Dame is nearby. It's like saying a guy from Manhattan is from New York State.
Before you go with your question, could you embellish on that? for me, and your listeners, because you said Midwest. I'm a Northeastern Ohio guy. I went to school at Ohio State. I consider Columbus, Central Ohio, the Midwest. So.
I will, because it's like going up to a guy from Manhattan and saying, hey, what's it like being from New York State? The guy's from New York City, right? I mean, we're from Chicago. Okay. That's my differentiation. Okay. No offense to anyone, but I don't think of myself as Midwestern.
Perfect. That's a much clearer picture for me. Now, which voice? I know I've got Brian and Mike. So
it's Mully. It's Mike.
Mike. Okay. All right. All right, Mike. I love it. Thank you.
Notre Dame is nearby, and that is one of the more intriguing teams out there. They came back from an impossible deficit to win a game. I don't know that they're going to be able to do that again, but they're still alive. They have to win this game, yeah, in order to get into the tournament.
One of their stars back in Bonzi.
Bonzi Colt, they're a different team with him. They're a very interesting team with him.
Well, you know, Mully and Brian, I tell you, you think about Notre Dame, it's one of the most unique situations the committee has had to face that I can recall in terms of adding a player of Bonzi Colson's caliber. Clearly, this team with him prior to his injury was a surefire tournament team. And again, we play the season out so we can see how things are going to play out on the court. That comeback last night was very impressive. The fact that they're in the discussion at this point is certainly positive for Notre Dame fans and obviously for those kids and the coaching staff. When you're in the position that they are in, or Louisville, you can maybe talk Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. When you're in that position where you're not quite sure, there's one real solution, and the only solution is to win. It's to win. I mean, that ultimately is what your ultimate separator is from other teams. And the other thing you can't do is look at them in isolation. Clearly, they have to handle their business, but this thing is a moving puzzle, because if you have some surprises in the conference tournaments, in other words, teams that were not going to be part of the field somehow get the automatic bid, that compresses what's available for the at-large pool. So you need, if you're Notre Dame, one, to win. That takes care of it in and of itself. The second thing is you need most of these teams that are going to be in the tournament anyway to win the conference tournament as well, so that you have a more expanded bubble or stoop, if you will, so that teams like Notre Dame and Louisville and other teams that you consider in that space would have more opportunity to get a positive vote from the committee.
You know, it seems like since the Bulls didn't do a good enough job tanking, some of the mock drafts have them getting Trey Young when it's all said and done, if he's available. And the question for you, Clark, is how I hear people say that the committee's going to be desperate to get Trey Young into the tournament, even though since January 1st they haven't won a road or a neutral site game. And pretty much ever since he said, hey, you know, I'm getting double, triple teamed here, and, you know, I can't do it alone. And you know what? He hasn't been able to do it alone. When you have a star, a talent such as that, and you know, you look at the numbers, teams that finish the season the way they did don't usually get in at large, but, you know, here's a different case, or is it?
I don't think so. I don't think that plays into it at all. Clearly, we love to see the outstanding players in college basketball be on teams that deserve to be in the tournament. Ben Simmons, a couple of years ago, was the preeminent star in college basketball, and this team was not worthy of being part of the field. I don't think it was as debatable as what Oklahoma is because of Oklahoma's quality of wins going back to the beginning of the season. And we don't discount that, nor do we put more weight on what's transpired recently. It's been an ugly finish. There's no way to deny that. It's been a terrible finish for the Sooners. Will that be enough to take away what they did on balance earlier on in comparison to the other teams they'll be compared to? See, that's the other element that people tend. Again, you can't look at these teams solely in isolation. You have to see what else is going on. So Oklahoma is still in that conversation. It'll be up to the committee to determine whether or not that team is worthy. I think they've probably done just enough by a whisker if everything else outside of their control plays in their favor, i.e., favorites winning conference tournaments.
Clark, thanks for putting up with this. We always appreciate talking to you, and your insights are great. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Oh, absolutely.
Crowning the champion.
You got it, buddy.
Thanks,
we're going to be calling now night and day, for God's sake. Clark Kellogg, how awesome. I got to ask him a question about Loyola. You know how that cool
is,
that is?
That is very cool.
And he, like, knows everybody's name, and he's watching it.
And he's watching the games,
He's the best. Mully and Hanley, we're going to keep the fun going. We've got, don't forget, we got Lucas Giolito coming up. We're going to talk to Bruce Levine next. Mully and Hanley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 to the Score. Bruce Levine is the Score's baseball expert. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning. It was fun watching the White Sox win by a safety yesterday, and the scores and the weather is starting to warm up here, guys, in Arizona. Home runs are getting hit out. Pitchers are just still working on fastballs and changeups. You're seeing, you know, guys like Gonzalez and guys like Homer are getting their butts kicked for the White Sox. So, you know, you don't put a lot of credence into still early spring training because we still have almost 3 weeks left. But, you know, there is a little concern for the White Sox starting pitching. You're going to have a big offense this year if you're going to have to win, if you're going to win a lot of games.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Michael Kopech's not good enough to come up yet. He needs more seasoning. I'll be very curious to see how he pitches today, just with the disappointment of knowing he's not in contention for a starting spot when he probably knows he should be in contention for a starting spot. And I'm not arguing that he needs more time and that the smart move is to let him season. I'm just curious to see how he responds to it.
Well, you know, it's a carrot for him. You know, it's dangling out there, you know, for him to – he can see, you know, that Shields won't be there next year, that Gonzalez won't be there next year, that he's competing with his teammates Lopez and Giolito and Fulmer for time. He sees, you know, the opportunity is certainly going to be there. So at age 21, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy right now. And, you know, go down there, throw your 150 innings, you know, command the fastball, make sure that your strikeout-to-walk ratio is high. And, you know, at age 22, you're going to be in that rotation next year. Or even at the end of this year, you know, if they choose to do that, you know, I don't, with an arm like that, if you get his 150 innings in, you're not even going to want to expose him to Major League Baseball, pushing the pitch count limit on such a young, powerful arm. But nonetheless, you know, there's a lot to be optimistic about there, that's for sure.
Bruce, when you hear Joe Maddon, he's asked if Brandon Morrow has the same kind of stuff the way Davis or even Aroldis Chapman had, and he said, well, equally as good. It's all about demeanor, too. It's not just about stuff. From what you've seen of him, taking that leap from the eighth inning to being the last guy with the ball, hopefully if it all works out, is he prepared to do that? The Cubs obviously believe that he is.
Well, you know, when we were talking to Joe about that, you know, and Mully, you know, talked about his, you know, comment about Darvis the other day, how he's aggressive, you know, in his the way he talks, but he's a matter of fact guy. I think they're going to protect him kind of like they did Davis last year. You know, he had 31 saves and 32 opportunities in 65 outings, so he was protected really well. And I think they're going to do the same thing with Morrow. I asked him I asked Morrow 2 days ago if throwing less innings could make him even more effective. And he said, yeah, probably so, you know, because I came in sometimes pitched two innings or an inning and two thirds. He said, you know, I'm looking forward to the challenge, but, you know, if they protect me like that, he said, I should have plenty in the tank. And he's a very confident guy looking forward to this challenge here.
You know, I think it's interesting to look at the two different teams in town, and the one obviously has no questions and we're, you know, concerned about Joe's hair color and shaving his head. And the other has, you know, nothing but questions. And, you know, I really believe as we sit here and talk about it, Bruce, the idea that they're going to somehow overachieve will be hampered by the starting pitching, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine that it's all going to work out. We're going to talk to Lucas Giolito in just a little bit. I feel good about him and about Lopez. I don't know what else to feel good about.
Well, and take it another step, and you know, how good do you feel about the bullpen? You know, I mean, yeah. you really think that they have, you know, they traded five important bullpen guys this year, and you know, they got young arms in there, and then they brought in Soria, you know, to kind of help things out. Maybe Santiago, if he's not a starting pitcher, is a long man and pitches almost every day out of the bullpen. But yeah, I mean, I think they're on pace to lose a lot of games just because of their pitching. But that doesn't mean that Giolito and Lopez and Fulmer can't progress. I mean, I think that's what you look for. You look for them to do well. Can the bullpen finish off with some of their good starts? I'm not encouraged by that. But nonetheless, I think you should be optimistic if you're a White Sox fan, looking forward and seeing, you know, the ability. I mean, we watched Luis Robert yesterday. We've watched him in spring training. You know, we watch Anderson growing. I think he's going to have a huge year this year. You're watching Moncada, you know, develop. You're watching, you know, guys like Jimenez come around. These are, you know, this is just legitimate talent that the White Sox haven't had in their organization in 20 years. I'm telling you, 20 years they haven't had talent like this. You have to go back even to almost 30 years when they had the Frank Thomases and the Venturas and people like that that they were drafting and developing. They went through 15 years where they didn't have a position player. You know, we talked about Joe yeah. Creedy being the last guy. So they've gotten tremendous talent. And as a baseball fan myself, it's exciting to watch the White Sox actually have talented players, guys with multiple abilities to go out there and compete. Now, how far they're going to go, I'm not that smart. I can't tell you that they're all going to be superstars, but I can tell you for the first time they have legitimate talent position player-wise. And, you know, look what that did for the Chicago Cubs, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years. Now you're going to see the White Sox have that type of talented player come into their system and make it fun to watch Chicago White Sox baseball. So from that perspective, I'm excited about it. I'm not telling you they won't lose 90 or 95 games. I'm just telling you it might be a better brand of baseball that you can look forward to with your Chicago White Sox.
Is a guy like Efren Navarro, 31 years old, just auditioning for other teams, or does he head just at 31? Does he head down to Des Moines when the team breaks camp, or barring injury, is he in the plans at all for the Cubs?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, Brian. You know, but once they start throwing the curveball and it's not in Arizona where the breaking ball doesn't do much here, you know, I think he goes back. And with all due respect, I think he's probably a good, you know, 4A player, but I don't think there's a spot on the team for him. But the good news is if, you know, something happens to Rizzo, you've got a guy that can go and play the position and he's a good bat, you know, and maybe it's not going to be a horrible thing considering all the other firepower you have, but I don't think there's a spot for him. He's been a nice story here in training, but you know, tell me the guys who were the champion spring training hitters last year. I can remember 2 years ago only because of his status, that or 3 years ago when Bryant had the great spring training and didn't make the team. Remember, I think he hit 11 home runs that year. Last year, Happ had a good spring training. But you don't really often remember who had a great spring training. You remember, you know, when it's carried over into the regular season.
Amen to that. Bruce, thank you. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You too,
we'll
Bruce.
See
thanks.
You soon. That's our guy, Bruce Levine. Let's get to Joe with a scoreboard update. We got Lucas Giolito on deck. Was that fair to say? I mean, he's
warming up.
Hit. Warming up. Much better. Much better, Joe.
Wow.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mullion Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. We are going to talk to Lucas Giolito in just a second, and delighted to do that. Really looking forward to seeing how he progresses this season with his place in the rotation locked, and really very interested in all the guys that came over in that Nationals trade. And let's Let's get to it right now. Let's bring in Lucas Giolito of the Chicago White Sox, their starting pitcher. Must be nice to hear those words, Lucas. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, and you're doing great. It's good to see you locked into a spot. I know it probably feels like a long time coming, even though you're still a very young man. How difficult is it, as a guy like yourself, do you understand these other guys? You know, we're going to see Kopech pitch today. He's already been told he's going back down. Came here with Ronaldo Lopez, and he has a spot, but Dane Dunning is going back down. You know, is it difficult to wait your time?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like you have a little bit more information than I know of. I just got to the field. I haven't been checking Twitter enough, I guess. But as far as answering the question goes, it's you get drafted out of high school, you get drafted out of college, whatever it may be. You immediately start on that whole developmental side in the minor leagues. And yeah, it's kind of just like having that patience while also being hungry to continue to move up and be able to contribute at the big league level as soon as you can.
Does your mindset change at all knowing in the offseason that you are going to be part of this thing for a full season after coming up and getting that consistency and success you had late last season?
Yeah, it helps. It definitely helps knowing that you've reached that first goal of breaking with the team, going out, starting the year in the big leagues, and from there it's just continuing to work, going out there every fifth day, competing, trying to get wins for the club. And it kind of takes away some of the other, I guess you could say, pressures of worrying about things that aren't really in your control. You can now just completely 100% focus on competing at the big league level.
What is it that you work on most of all in spring training? I mean, are you looking at, I mean, obviously repeating your delivery is obviously the most important thing for any pitcher, but are there pitches you're working on? Are there things, we see these results come through. We don't know what the game plan is going in or what you're working on. There could be a thousand different reasons that you're doing something and we don't know what they are. How does the development part of spring training work?
I'd say that you go in just wanting to prepare for the season. So that means, getting your innings up, getting comfortable on the mound, getting back into the swing of things as far as pitching and live game situations go. And then for me, specifically, I like to go in with a few goals in mind about what I'd like to really improve going into the season. This season in particular, it's continuing to command the fastball a little bit better, especially to my extension side, and throwing the curveball for a strike. Keeping it relatively simple. Obviously you go out there every day, you're working on everything, every part of your game, but to set a few like specific goals of, pitches I want to execute better.
We had the pleasure of having Coop on as a regular on our show for years here on the Mully and Hanley show. So we know Coop's personality. He's direct at times. And how does a laid back California kid, if in fact you're that, get along with the kind of hard nosed New York grizzled pitching coach who will tell you exactly what he's thinking?
Well, it's funny because I am from Southern California, laid back, but my dad is from Queens as well, not too far away from where Coop grew up. So I'm kind of used to that type of personality already. But
talking about stuff, yeah.
Yeah. No, working with Coop's been fantastic. I really appreciate that straight shooter style, always honest. If I throw a side, he'll tell me, hey, that side could have been a little bit better, but we did get this good work out of it. Always talking about the positives, the things that are going well, and ways, talking about ways to improve what needs to be improved. So the communication's been really fantastic so far, and I love working with him.
Lucas, you come from a family of actors and writers and producers, and obviously you attended Harvard Westlake High School in Studio City there in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It is the Harvard of Los Angeles High School, literally and figuratively. a 16th overall selection. Was there any, you know, did you just have a natural gift for baseball? Was there any thought of, you know, getting into the movies, getting into the family business?
Yeah, you know what? It that definitely was not the path I wanted. I grew up, even as a kid, helping my mom run lines with her when she would have auditions and things like that. It just never really appealed to me. Getting up on stage in front of people, you know, having to deliver lines, remember lines, that the thought of doing that almost horrifies me. Whereas, you know, my mom did it, my dad did it, and now my little brother Casey is in college for it. Wow. He's going to be an actor. He's in theater program right now. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it was sports from the get-go, especially baseball. I fell in love with baseball when I was like 5-6 years old, you know, playing T-ball, moving on to Little League. And, yeah, I mean, that was pretty much the goal. It became a real goal probably when I was like 15 years old and I was finally able to start throwing the ball over the plate and I was throwing it pretty hard. So, yeah, it's always been the dream.
Is the mid to upper 90s fastball the bread and butter, or what's your out pitch at this point, and do you foresee it changing as you get more seasoning?
For me, it's kind of constantly changing depending on the day, depending on the situation, the type of batters I'm facing. You know, I used to be a little more black and white. Yeah, I'm going to throw the fastball as hard as I can and then, you know, snap off curveballs. Whereas now I'm throwing the changeup a lot. I'm throwing the slider as well. You know, it's kind of just a constant evolution, I guess you could say. And, you know, I'm always trying to find new ways to get guys out.
You were the 16th overall selection coming out of high school because you had the elbow issue, and obviously you had to have Tommy John surgery. We're sitting here talking about a guy like Jake Arrieta being on the open market, and you hear people say things like, well, he hasn't had Tommy John. It's almost like a the sort of thing now that it's considered like, oh, you got your Tommy John
you're
out of the way.
You're good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
How quickly did – I mean, you rebounded from that immediately, and obviously it's not been an issue. Did it help you? Do you feel like you're a better pitcher as a result of getting that fixed?
I'd say mentally for sure. It you know, going through the whole rehab process, the physical therapy and whatnot after the surgery, I was 18 years old when I got it, and it was just kind of like a mental grind. You know, going from, you know, I was throwing like 95 plus at that point to now my arm's like in a cast, and then it's in this little metal device, and then you're doing like the most mundane exercises over and over every day and just, you know, waiting for that day that you get to get back on a mound again. It's kind of much more of a mental grind than a physical one, especially for me. And that was definitely super helpful for my career early on, you know, as a young kid in pro ball. So yeah, I'd say, in the long run, it's made me a better player, better pitcher, a little bit more mentally tough, I guess you could say.
Considering the group that is coming through the pipeline, you're the elder statesman at 23, and guys like Michael Kopech, it's interesting to hear, and you hear it with you too, mature beyond your years, but when you hear Michael Kopech in the last week or so kind of self-scouting, talking about different moments where he had to get serious about pitching and about his career and also kind of self-analyzing his toolbox. Mm-hmm. Did you go through all that too? Did you at any age where you know, decide, okay, this is what I need to do to get to the major leagues and now this is what I need to do to stay here?
Yeah. I feel like I'm constantly doing that actually. You know, constantly looking at video, you know, evaluating my pitches. A little bit more of looking into the analytical stuff as well, seeing how your pitches look on paper as far as spin rate and angle and extension and all that good stuff. Taking a little bit closer look at that kind of stuff as well. Yeah, I mean, I'm, like I said, constantly looking at ways to make the pitches better or looking at ways to improve what might be a little bit weak in the arsenal.
When you look at some of these young guys coming up that are hitters, I mean, we saw Lewis Robert hit a grand slam yesterday. I know Eloy has been battling a knee, but man, he can hit. We saw him on tape. What is the future for this organization? Do you feel like you're a part of something that can really pop here in a year or two?
Yeah, the sky's the limit. I mean, the talent is crazy. Just walking around our spring training clubhouse, we got like 20-year-old kids that are just. I say that I'm 23.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I know it's weird. It makes you feel a little bit older, even though I'm still one of the younger guys. But yeah, the talent is crazy, and everyone's vibing. Everyone's having a really good time in camp. That's what I like to see. Young guys are able to be comfortable, be themselves, and we're all just having really fun time. And the spring training, seeing the talent on the field, it just makes me excited for the future. Excited for all these young guys coming up. They're going to help the team. From the pitchers, position players, the hitting, it's kind of like all encompassing. It's going to be really special soon for sure.
How do you handle all the the chatter about, okay, the White Sox are over under 68 wins, they're still rebuilding, 2020 is their year, and yet you come to the ballpark and other guys are saying we could surprise this year, and somewhere in between is probably the reality. But how do you handle all the conversation around a rebuilding team versus coming out there and trying to, win every game that you start?
Kind of like what Ricky says. They media will say that stuff. People talk about the rebuild or whatever it may be. But as a team, we come into the clubhouse every day. We're a unit. We're like a family in here. And we just go out there and we play as hard as we can. You'll notice that guys are always going to be hustling down base paths. We're always going to be backing up bases, things like that. We're going to do all those small things correctly, play clean baseball, and overall just give it our 100% effort every single day. And so, when you go out and do that, you don't really worry about the rebuild or those other kind of things. You just go out there and play the best kind of baseball you can.
Great stuff, Lucas. Great talking to you. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Take care, mate. That's great stuff. That is Lucas Giolito, and man, he's got some pipes on him.
Oh boy!
I mean, I'm telling you right now, he's definitely going to take your job someday. I'm working forever. Okay, I'm going to drop right here. You know that.
I got a cold shower after that one.
Ooh. I'd be worried about him in about 10 years.
You're going to be doing the 7-hour overnight shift?
If that's what it takes. Maybe even 7.5. All righty.
Go the extra mile. There you go. Now
everyone.
You're just showing off.
I'm going to head to spring training, so I'm not going to be here tomorrow. But I'll be back on Monday, and I'll tell you everything I saw with the Cubs and the White Sox. I'm getting to see each team play twice. So, it's a quick trip, but timed well. Want to thank everyone for calling, texting, emailing. Most of all, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, Lucas Giolito and I will be here live at 5 tomorrow morning. Please join us.
It's always scary when you hear a guy that can do your job better than you.
Exactly right.
What are you going to do?
Hollywood looks. He's got the pipes.
I know. Guy should get into acting. What the hell? But there's money in pitching. Big money in pitching. And you can always act, for God's sake. It's not like you... All right. I'm sorry, Coop. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.